Hi, I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast.
Yeah. So, Megan, before we get into it, I wanted to share an anesthesia story from last week, which I think I briefly mentioned to you, but I wanted to share with our listeners.
Oh, yeah, because you barely mentioned it.
So I had a procedure done last week, and it was an endoscopy, which I think I've, you know, told you about, Megan, but I have pretty bad acid reflux because, listen, all of the most delicious foods like garlic and chocolate and red wine, they cause a lot of acid, and just like my body doesn't do well with it. So I finally went in for this procedure. Very straightforward. I mean, endoscopy, they just like pop in there, see what's going on. It lasts like 5 minutes, whatever, but you still have to go under and do the whole thing. So, you know, when you go under anesthesia, you come out and you're groggy and you're probably talking and you don't really know what you're saying. But I came out and my first memory is talking to the nurse about Real Housewives of Potomac, because in my anesthesia, like propofol dreams, I saw Giselle, like I saw Monique, like there was something going on in there that was Potomac related. So I started talking to her about the podcast and how, oh, I needed my, like, I was like, oh, I need my phone because I need to write this down before I forget and, you know, whatever. And I was mentioning Bravo and she was like, oh, there's only one show that I watch on Bravo. And I kind of expected it to be one of the Housewives or Below Deck. A lot of people are like, oh, I don't watch Housewives, but I watch Below Deck. And she was like, yeah, the only show I watch is Don't Be Tardy. And I was like, oh, well, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's an interesting choice.
Right, of all the shows. And I said,
of all the shows.
Yeah. So I said, oh, well, you know, just fun fact, Kim Zolciak and I, we have the same birthday, May 19th. And she was like, cool, okay. And then, you know, she went through the whole rest of like me coming out of my hazy anesthesia dreams and whatever. And then before I knew it, I was like walking out of the facility and it was all good. But it just goes to show that, you know, even in my drug-induced dreams, Bravo's always there.
I've never been fully put under, and it's my worst fear of like what I'll say when I come out.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, I think for the most part, people are really in good spirits under these kind of drugs. You know, it's not like you are, I don't know, going to be saying things that are negative, I think. You know, I love watching... I love watching those videos of people we've talked about on the show before with, you know, when people are coming out of anesthesia, like those videos when they trick their little sister into thinking there's a zombie apocalypse or whatever. Like, and you're just like kind of generally along for the ride at that point.
So funny. Speaking of along for the ride, no, I don't really have a good transition, but Summer House season 5 trailer is here.
Oh my God. Yes.
Did you watch?
Uh-huh. Let's play the audio.
This place is a disaster.
Never in my life did I see this for me.
Hannah, what is up your ass?
I wish I had something on my ass right now because I feel a lot better.
How many sandwiches have you made for me?
Come on, you f***ing jackass.
Admit it! Admit it!
I f***ing don't like you.
Da 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 da.
Yo, we're in the summer house.
Dude, this is so pandemic.
I'm just excited to start a life with you and like a family.
What if we just like eloped?
We gather here today to celebrate the wedding of Kyle and Amanda.
I truly do love you.
I'm ready for engagement, marriage, babies.
You can touch my boobs, I don't care.
Sierra made her presence known.
Let's f*** the guys up.
I would f*** her.
I love you so much. The question is, like, deep down, do I feel like I'm not with the right person?
Your smoke show. Total babe.
If I met this Carl 2 summers ago, it would have been a totally different story.
Do you still like her?
Let's be honest. Yes.
Should I just Carl?
I just love love.
Sierra is dating down. Luke is dating up.
Careful, careful. I got it.
We dated for 7 months.
And you rub her in my face to make me feel bad?
I don't know what world you're living in, but it's not reality.
Dude, you're texting Hannah, too, at, like, midnight and 11 o'clock?
No, we talk.
What is it that Lindsay needs?
Where is that guy?
I'm just gonna leave the house.
Oh, hey, Lucas.
What's up, hubs?
Lindsay over the
what the fuck?
Mother!
You put me through hell!
Stop coming after me, Amanda!
What is happening?
You are such a bad friend of these girls.
Why do I have to be attacked by a little blonde leprechaun?
Wow.
Why do I have to be yelled at by a blonde little leprechaun?
I've never really thought of Kyle as like leprechaun-ish, and now I can't unsee it.
I know. Also, okay, I don't know that we've talked about this, and I don't know that enough people have been talking about it. Maybe they have, and I've been under a rock. But have you watched The Flight Attendant with Kaylee Cuoco?
Not yet. And
on HBO Max?
No, not yet.
Luke is in the first scene.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh.
I was like, how do I know that guy? Like, you know how you have, I was like, have I dated this? Like, I wasn't sure, like, how to place him because it was so out of context for me. And then I was like, oh, it's Luke.
Oh, wow. I know that he was, you know, pursuing acting, I think even directing and producing. The last time he was in the office and in for an interview, we talked a little bit about that when the interview was over. And obviously we know he's into modeling. So just, I mean, you know, Bravo people will pop up in the most unexpected places.
They really will. But this season looks good. I mean, I do like that it's sort of a change of pace because I don't think they're going back to the city. I think they are quarantining together this season.
Yes, it is Big Brother style.
Yeah, I mean, because really, like if you think about any of our ensemble shows, like a Housewives or anything, we're always seeing them together. So you always get the feeling that they're together all the time anyway, but it's just not true. I mean, these people have their own lives. They get to go home at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So to now be in an environment where you must be together all the time, I just think that's going to amp up the drama so much.
For sure. It's a recipe for disaster, but also exactly what we want, because unexpected things happen, like Lindsay creeping into Luke's room and us hearing moaning and making out noises from behind a closed door.
And there's a new lady.
Mm-hmm.
Luke's love interest, maybe. I don't know. It just seems like a lot of the drama surrounds Hannah. So I'm very excited for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Summer House premieres Thursday, February 4th at 9, 8 central.
And as you guys know, we have been doing our Below Deck recaps as a separate bonus episode, but the Below Deck after show premiered this week. So now those bonus episodes are going to be the audio from that. So those episodes will be coming out on Sundays tomorrow. There's also a Below Deck marathon coming up the week of the 21st. So starting Monday, Below Deck all the time. Everything you need.
So, holidays right around the corner, but it's not too late to get someone you love a great gift. Real Housewives wine is available, people. You can purchase it at realhousewiveswine.com.
So, you and I both tried some of this wine. What is your review?
Right. I personally would go with the red blend. That's one I'm sticking with.
Okay. All right. That's fair. I gave my red blend away to some of my friends because 'tis the season of giving, right? But I did keep the Sauvignon Blanc and rosé for myself. I will say the Sauvignon Blanc was my favorite. I like my rosés a little bit on the drier side, and this one was sweet. But the Sauvignon Blanc, I felt, was very light, crisp, very drinkable. It's the perfect kind of wine that if you are going to sit down and binge Bravo one night and you just want to like keep refilling that glass, go for the Sauvignon Blanc.
And let's be honest, if you have any sort of Bravo fan in your life, they'll be thrilled to get it.
It's true. It's kind of like a novelty item as well. Like you could just kind of display it somewhere in your home.
Totally.
Also, we have a very special guest coming on the episode next week as a guest co-host, and it is none other than Ashley Darby from Real Housewives of Potomac. So we will be saving our Potomac Part 1 and Part 2 recaps for next week because there is a lot to talk about with Ashley.
I know. And honestly, it's very hard for me that we're not talking about it this week.
I know.
Because it was, Part 1 was so good, but it'll be worth the wait when we do it next week.
I have a lot of questions for Ashley.
Yes.
Okay, so what are we recapping today?
So we're going to be talking about Real Housewives of Atlanta, Real Housewives of Orange County, and Real Housewives of Salt Lake City.
Plus, I interviewed Real Housewives of Salt Lake City's Meredith Marks, and I'll be chatting to her later in the episode. And of course, we'll end with Rose and Thorn.
All right, Atlanta.
Atlanta. Okay, so we have two new faces who grace us in this episode. We have LaToya, who is a friend of, and we have Drew Sidora, who is the fifth housewife of the season.
Well, and we have a third person if you count Drew's husband, Ralph, who is hot.
He is hot, but he is also a little
terrible
much.
Husband.
There is so much to unpack there, so I can't wait till we get to that final scene. But yes, he is at first glance a very attractive man, and we know how we all feel about getting a new hot house husband, but there's much to do there.
All right. So LaToya comes into our lives in an interesting fashion, because Kenya usually does not warm up to new people, but she's all about LaToya. And it's not even her friend. It's Candy's friend, right?
Yeah, her lower third is Candy's friend that Kenya stole. Like, that is not very common for Kenya to take to a newbie like this. I'm getting crush vibes. And there was a hint of that in the super tease for the season where Kenya says something about like, oh, I got a crush on her, something along those lines. So we're definitely seeing the beginning of this girl crush that may ultimately become something else. I don't know. But it is not characteristic of Kenya to be taking to somebody like this.
Right. I kind of hope that marriage has put Kenya off so much that she's just like, you know what? Women now.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. Also, does Drew starting the show in a boot make you think of Brandy from Beverly Hills?
Oh my God, that is such a great point. I didn't make the connection before, but yes. So really, she has the makings of becoming a great housewife.
Absolutely. There's something about the lucky boot. And let us not forget, Portia was in a boot at BravoCon. So there's a lot of good luck there.
Yes. We found out a lot about Drew's marriage. Can we just get to that part?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Because Drew and her husband, Ralph, are living with Drew's mom?
Yeah, well, technically she's living with them.
Well, the mom is living with them. Right, yes. That sounds like a recipe for divorce, right? Like, that's don't know how else to say it, especially in quarantine. Like, no, it's just not setting yourself up for success.
Definitely not. I mean, Pastor Jeanette seems like quite a character. And I also love when we get a new housewife, we get potentially a hot house husband and we get a mom who's going to be a big character. And we got that in her. But I feel like, quarantine or not, I'd be like, after a certain amount of time, mom, you got to go back home, because we got a situation going on here with my family that needs to be worked on. And clearly there's a lot of work to be done in Drew and Ralph's relationship.
I mean, on one hand, it seemed like, oh, this is like a really great couple. Like, even when Ralph was talking to Cynthia's fiance and just about like what was happening, I didn't get the impression that things were It was sort of like that jokey, like, oh, pray for me, man, you know, but it didn't seem like things were bad.
Yeah.
But then when Drew reveals to the ladies, well, we got into a fight and he disappeared for 3 days, I was like, what?
Last week, he left and didn't tell me where he was.
Wait, right? How long was he gone?
He was gone for like 3 days.
You even see it on Mike's face when he says that, because Mike's not very good at hiding his expressions, right? He is a very expressive man, and I love that about him. And even when Ralph brings that up, Mike is like, whoa, that's no. I mean, Mike is a father. He adores Cynthia. I don't think it even computes in his mind how somebody could just up and leave without telling their wife and kids where they're going for that amount of time. In the middle of a pandemic.
He crossed state lines. What? But like, she didn't even know that until this episode. She didn't even know where he went. And he wasn't even going to tell her. And like, still after he told her, was like, see, it does nothing for you to know. That just would not be an option in my relationship, to not share every single detail.
I mean, the thing about it is, this has been a very difficult year for a lot of people. So the concept of I need a break and I need to get away and I need a few days to myself is pretty acceptable. Of course, everyone is entitled to some privacy, to some time by themselves. But when you have responsibilities at home, which include children and a wife, you need to communicate that. It is like the fundamental thing that happens in a relationship is communication. You got to talk about what's going on. So it's just very strange that he is trying to allow himself all this space and this privacy. But then we also find out that he's spying on his family while he's away. Like, why does he get privacy but they don't?
You have a camera in the house that watches us?
I have cameras everywhere.
Okay,
what are you talking
so were
about?
You watching us when you were gone?
No.
That's a lie. You gonna lie to me? You're lying to me. You were watching us in the family room, me and my mom and the kids. I didn't know it was a camera there, and I saw the camera and you were watching us. So now you're lying to me, that's what we're doing? That's crazy.
That was a whole other crazy layer to this. Because if there was in fact that photo, which maybe we'll find out next episode, because she's like, no, I saw the photo in your phone. That's how I knew you were spying on me. And he's like, it never existed. Ugh, what? Like, that's just, it's terrible.
What Drew needs to do is go into the photos and go into recently deleted, because even when you delete pictures, they stay for up to like, I think 30 days or something like that, unless you go in and permanently delete them. So he might not know that. He might know that. He seems like he's really into this like privacy, security, camera, you know, type of stuff, which is very strange. So he might have deleted the picture, like hard gone from every, you know, iCloud and all of it. But Drew, if you're listening, check out that recently deleted folder.
Yeah. I don't know. There's something very creepy about that, like just the whole thing. And I really didn't like that he put it on, well, what you'll never understand is that as a man, sometimes you have to leave. Like, no,
yeah, like
don't what? Bring all men into this. That's a you yeah. thing. You know,
I hate when men say that it's like something you'll never understand. And when there's that hard divide between the genders of like, well, this is what men do and this is what women do. Like, this isn't the 1950s, bro. Like, this is not how it works anymore. And to think that he is entitled to these things, but she might not be, because what if she did the same thing to him? There's no way he would be respectful of that and just be like, well, you don't have to tell me where you were for 3 days. He would be probably tracking her on her phone or something, just given what we've already seen. But it just, I don't like that double standard. There's just no room for that in 2020.
I will say props to her. Like, really, I do have such good feelings about her as a housewife, because this was her first episode and she brought us all of that information about her marriage.
Yeah. Right. We didn't get her in episode one, but she came through in episode two, like strong.
Absolutely. The other relationship I'm worried about is Portia and Dennis. You know, we get her. She came back home after having been arrested at the protest. But then when she was talking about Dennis and she's talking about how like their fights are getting to level 10 and it'll be something about not picking up PJ's toys. It's just like, if it's already at that point, please don't get married. Please.
Before quarantine, something small didn't feel big to us. But now, toxic can be you taking a long time to bring me the bottle. Toxic can be that you didn't clean the living room up with her toys. Like, simple shit can take you to level 10. Whatever it is, it just doesn't feel like we are able to connect.
Well, Portia was on Watch What Happens Live, I think it was last week. And she was asked, where are you guys? And she said, we are single. We're single, but we're co-parenting. We're getting along. So at this point, we know that they are not together. But it seems like their relationship kind of just got pushed to the side. And it wasn't really something either one of them felt particularly compelled to invest in at this point.
Also, just the whole pandemic part of it. People's relationships are in different places because of it. And it's so interesting to me. Like, even when I was interviewing Madison last week, you know, do you and Austin think that you would have still broken up had it not been for the pandemic? And she's like, there's no way of me knowing, you know? Yeah, everyone's right. Been affected in some way or another.
Definitely. And I understand what Portia was saying too about these minor things becoming such huge fights. And that is part of just the general stress of quarantine and the pandemic, is anxiety is high for everyone at every level at the moment. So there are little things that happen in my house that all of a sudden I feel like I'm, you know, yelling at Danny for. And then I'm like, okay, what am I actually upset about? Am I projecting? Is this just not what I'm really mad about? And it's true. Like, the little things can explode, but the foundation is what matters. And I think there have been so many cracks in Portia and Dennis's foundation that it's just not something they're able to rebuild right now.
Right.
I think it's wild to think about how successful Candy is and how accomplished she is in her life and in her career. But she has such admiration for Riley because she's doing something that Candy never did, and that's going to college. And it's something like I kind of take for granted because, you know, I was lucky enough to go away to college. But I look at someone like Candy and I'm like, well, she didn't need college. Like, look at how successful she is without it. I mean, not everyone gets to have the kind of career that Candy does or whatever. But I just love that she is
absolutely
just so grateful that she can provide that for Riley and that Riley wants to pursue that. There are so many famous celebrity kids who will easily just be like, oh, I'm just going to go into entertainment, or I'll just end up doing X, Y, and Z because that's the easiest door to walk through for me. I have those connections already. But there's a lot of respect. I have a lot of respect for Riley to be like, I want to do something bigger than myself. I want to go. I think she's pursuing law, right? Is that what we,
yeah,
that we've learned? So I just really love seeing Candy in that mom mode. And, you know, little Riley is a grown up now. And it's just, it's so cool to see Candy admire her daughter in that way. Also, I want some wine from Aisha Curry. I had no idea that she had wine.
Oh, I love her so much.
I love her so much. Like, they didn't say the name of the brand. I need to Google that real quick. So I spoke with Real Housewives of Salt Lake City's Meredith Marks about what it's been like for her to watch her separation unfold on TV and how she and Seth are doing today, plus all of the drama at Mary's Luncheon. We also play a fun little game to get to know the differences between her and Lisa Barlow, because everyone says they look the same. Here's that interview. All right, guys, we are here with Meredith Marks from the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. Meredith, what's going on?
Hi, I'm doing well today. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm so excited to be talking to you. I am so obsessed with this show. I mean, I know there's been such an amazing fan response, but I'm so curious to hear from you. Going into the season, were you nervous about how your separation would unfold on camera?
Yes, of course. I'd be crazy to say no to that. You know, it's a very daunting process for me, at least in general, to open up. I was a very private person. So just even talking to, you know, close friends about things like that was a big deal. So knowing that I'm basically discussing it with the entire world, yes, I was very nervous.
Right. So we see that you guys have a rough couple of weeks while he's traveling back and forth to Ohio. What was going through your mind in those couple of weeks?
You know, it's a lot all over the place. You know, during that time, for us, it was a roller coaster, basically. You know, we were really trying to see if we could work through these issues, but we've had a lot of geographical distance and we're, you know, living in separate homes. And there were just a lot of volatility going on between us, trying to reconcile what our next step was, if there were next steps for us, you know, trying to figure things out. So it was very intense, very difficult and hard, but much needed, in all honesty. We both really needed some room.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we know that you guys have lived in a lot of places over the years, and Seth is like, let's move to Ohio. And you're like, absolutely not. So is Salt Lake your favorite place that you guys have lived so far?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Park City to me is one of the most incredible places in the world because you have the proximity to a city, but you're in a ski resort.
Yeah.
And so it's like this incredible lifestyle where you can have a real, you know, working life. I can have a career. I can do all the stuff I want to do. I have access to, you know, everything that you would get from a major city, but you're living in a resort and it's incredible. It's beautiful. It's magical.
And now where else have you guys lived? Like, what's another city that you were just like, oh, if it wasn't here, it would be there?
In theory, I would say Toronto. I absolutely loved Toronto, but as an American and running an American-based business, being in Canada did create a lot of obstacles for me.
Yeah.
But in terms of just the city in and of itself, I love Toronto. I love it.
It's definitely on my list of places that I want to visit. It's like, it feels like it's so approachable, especially being, you know, I'm in New York. I'm like, Toronto feels like a really good place to just do like a weekend getaway.
Oh, yeah. It's super, super easy from New York. And you definitely should go. And I will give you a list of things to do.
Yes, please. I do. I know there's like bungee jumping off the side of that tower that I've seen people do on like social media. So that's like definitely one thing that I want to do. But yes, please send me a list. Well, now I think the $1 million question, really, I know we have a lot more that's going to play out this season, but how are you and Seth today?
You know, so you'll see the journey to some degree. Of course, there's been a lot of time that has passed since then. And we've also been in a pandemic. But I can very honestly say that Housewives combined with COVID saved my marriage.
Wow.
We're a very strong place, probably the strongest place we have ever been in our marriage, but certainly stronger than the last, you know, several years.
Yeah, no, well, that's great to hear. I mean, what is it like then watching back everything that's happening on the show? Are you guys kind of watching it together, like, remember where we were and look at where we are now?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to watch. We have watched some episodes together and some not together, you know, like it depends on if we're in the same place at the same time.
Right.
I honestly like to see it first.
Mm-hmm.
Not because yep. I know he's going to see it, but then at least I can get my head in the mental space to prepare, because it is hard when you're in a good space to watch, you know, the drama, the arguments, the hostility, the anger, you know, it's hard to put your head back there. And then, of course, you're sort of like saying your head, and you said that, you know?
Yep.
You know, and it's like, so we agreed to let it go. And that was, you know, part of moving forward for us was letting that stuff go. But sometimes it still stings to see something, you know, that was upsetting at the time.
Right.
So it's hard. It's very difficult. But Seth has really been extraordinarily supportive with the show airing. I was really, you know, very anxious about it and almost afraid that it would spiral us back into a pretty bad space. And he's been really strong and supportive. And, you know, he's been fantastic.
Yeah, well, that's great to hear. I mean, and we're so thrilled that you guys have been so open and shared so much, because I think we've just seen such an incredible and unique journey so far. So I really can't wait to see how it plays out the rest of the season. I'm so glad to hear you guys are doing so well today.
Yeah, it feels great to be there, because I think that like most people perceive a couple going into Housewives, the odds are, you know, stacked against you to begin with. Nonetheless, mm-hmm. you're already like separated and not in a good space. So it's nice to see, in my view, that the process can actually work in your favor in many, many ways. And, you know, I like to call it glam therapy. It's not obviously not real therapy, but it does force you to really analyze and look at exactly what you're saying, what you're doing, how you engage with people, how you treat people, how they treat you, what's important, what's not important. And for us, it was, you know, an incredible journey, and it saved us.
Yeah, no, that's great. It's funny that you bring up therapy, because my co-host and I have been joking about these little moments throughout the show that we're like, oh, that must have come from therapy. And the first one is Lisa saying to her, or Lisa's husband saying to her, do you want feedback or do you want me to just be listening? And we were like, that is such a great tool to have. And then the other one that we were like, that might have been something that like Meredith learned, was when you were like, I'm disengaging, I'm no longer engaging. And you were just like, I'm removing myself from this situation. Like, there are these moments that feel like therapy in some ways.
100%. I mean, that is something that I did learn in therapy. And, you know, because when Seth and I were fighting in that, you know, height of our hostility towards each other, we really learned to use the timeout, you know, learned that you got to walk away, because when you get that angry, you say things you don't mean, you do things you don't want to do, and it just spirals. And so walking away is a great way to give someone time and space to work through their anger a little bit. And then you can talk about things in a calm way.
Mm-hmm.
And for Lisa, she talks her way through anything. You know, that's how she resolves her issues. She and I are wired very differently. I do a lot of internalizing, and she has to talk it through to work it out in her mind. So kudos to John on that one. That's what makes him a great husband.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was like taking notes just for my own relationship. I was like, that is such a good question to ask when somebody is venting to you.
100%. Because if you just want to vent, you talking is just going to escalate the situation. So
absolutely.
I love seeing that. I was like, that's good. He gets it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of escalation, I want to talk about Mary's luncheon because things kind of quickly spiral out of control. So for you being there, can you pinpoint the moment where it all just went left?
I think the moment where it really went haywire, I think it was, so it was Mary's luncheon. And I think Mary felt, you know, that she was owed an apology by Jen. And it was, given everything that had transpired at the 20s party, it was kind of like a good faith effort for Mary to invite Jen to begin with. And I think that Mary felt that Jen's apology was really focused towards me and not towards her. Mm-hmm. And so she was sort of getting a little anxious, or I don't know if that's the right word, agitated by that perhaps. And then when Jen said, well, it was something to the effect of, I speak for all of us, or I say what we're all thinking, or something like that.
Yeah.
Just having called her names, you know, just a week before, I think that set Mary off. You know, she was kind of like, wait a second, you don't speak for everyone. Like, you're saying mean things about me and I'm not going to let you say that. And that's, and then they just, you know, clashed, and that's where it all kind of imploded in my view.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for you, it was almost like you were kind of in the middle of this tension at one point. You know, we see you walk away from Jen at the 1920s party. So when you're sitting there, were you like, I need to speak up right now? Or were you like, I'm just going to let these two go at it and try to work it out?
You know, for me, I didn't want to speak up all that much because in my view, I felt that I was owed an apology. I felt that Mary was owed an apology, and that if you wanted to get it in, perhaps that should have been done in front of the group because everything that happened at the 20s party was in front of the group. But if you were really going to sit down and work through feelings and emotions and all kinds of stuff, to me, that's an individual process. So I sort of felt like that should be something that Jen and I could do one-on-one, that Mary and Jen could do one-on-one.
Yeah.
And, you know, a group setting for that to me is not the best setting. The apology, sure. And a light conversation on it, sure. But if you're going to get deep and really work through your feelings in a friendship, to me, that's something that's best done individually. And so I sort of was like, well, let's let Jen say what she has to say and we'll move on. I really didn't say all that much at that luncheon.
Yeah, right. You were like, I'm just going to let this unfold how it does and just pick up the pieces after.
Exactly.
So who kept Jen's Louis Vuitton AirPods is my question, because she left that on the table.
I believe, and I could be mistaken, I believe Mary took those for her son, maybe? I don't remember exactly. I'm pretty sure Mary kept them.
Okay, as long as they didn't go to waste, you know?
No one's throwing those out, I can promise you.
Well, at this point in the season too, like, the biggest tension that we have right now seems to be between Jen and Mary. So looking ahead, who else are we going to see butt heads this season?
Everybody? No, I'm kidding. There's definitely a lot. I mean, the tension definitely will continue between Heather and Lisa. And between Whitney and Lisa, you'll see tension between me and Jen. You'll see tension between Whitney and Jen. You'll see tension between Heather and Jen. I don't think there is any tension between Whitney and Lisa. And Mary, for the most part, I don't think really had any real tension other than with Jen that I can recollect. So, you know, those really, and Lisa and I were good the whole time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, pretty much that.
So a lot of Jen going on there. So we're going to see a lot more, which, you know, doesn't totally surprise me. She's pretty outspoken,
yeah.
You know. Okay, well, jumping ahead a little bit, before Brooks's fashion show, your house basically implodes. So, like, what the hell happened?
I mean, I couldn't have planned this. If I wanted to plan this, saying I want to do this stuff on camera, I couldn't have even thought of this to happen. Like, between
right.
the explosive blender I already had, which is, like, insane because I've never done that before. I'm usually not that bad in the kitchen. And then that morning with, you know, Brooks running late, the toilet leaked into the smoke detector, and the smoke detector is going off, and the dog's barking. And it was, like, complete chaos. And we're rushing to get out for this big event, you know, which was for Brooks, it was insane. It was amazing.
Yes, significant. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I was very stressed, to say the least. I'll be interested to see how that all unfolds, because I don't know. I don't know how I really reacted. I was so in the moment, you know, probably freaking out and screaming. I have no idea.
I think maybe internally, but like outside, I think you were pretty composed because you probably didn't want to put the nervous energy onto Brooks ahead of his fashion show.
No, exactly. I totally didn't. I didn't want to stress him out anymore because he was already nervous and stressed. And so I tried. So it's good to hear that. You know, I tried to stay calm. But yes, internally, I was like, this is crazy. This doesn't happen. Right.
I mean, it's like Murphy's Law, right? Anything that can go wrong will go wrong. And it just like happened at the worst time. And that's just how it goes.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, despite you guys being late, it seems like the show was a success. But we do see you get pretty emotional in your interview over the fact that Seth wasn't there. And you kind of hint that maybe you feel personally responsible for that. So can you talk a little bit about what was going through your mind at that time?
Seth and I have been separated on and off for a very long time. And we were very private about it because while our kids were still in the house, we didn't want it to impact them. We wanted to give them a home of stability. And so they didn't know that we had been separated until shortly before we started filming.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I had worked so hard because my family over these last several years had several significant health issues. And then, of course, my children, you know, had moved several times. And so to me, trying to put on this, you know, appearance, at least, of a strong parental front together was really important for the children to have a sense of stability growing up.
Yeah.
And so I felt an immense amount of guilt for my separation, you know, for my children, not for like anything other than that. I just felt like I was almost letting them down in a weird way. The repercussions of my choice and Seth's choice to separate impacting Brooks, just, it upset me. It made me very sad. And it made me feel a sense of guilt, you know?
Yeah.
It was my fault, in essence, even though I know it's not my fault, but I was the only one who could have changed that, in my view, you know? And obviously, at some point, we all have to do what we need
right.
to do, and you can't, you know, continue living a life just, you know, to keep your children feeling stable. And that's why I tried to wait until they moved out of the house to deal with these issues. There's still an element of guilt for that, you know? It's not going to go away.
Of course. Well, you know, it's difficult to reconcile your needs and, like, you wanted this space, but then to, you know, have that then affect your kids, you're just sort of like, how do I balance this? You know, that's a challenge.
Exactly.
Well, you teased on social media that there's more to the story when it comes to the Brooks and Jen situation. So can you give us another hint about what we might see on the show?
Well, so I don't know what will actually be shown on camera moving forward from this, but I can tell you that, you know, what happened that night, there was a lot of history going into the evening that there's no way it could have been shown because that would have taken its own episode in and of itself. But, you know, Jen had been aware of what my family was going through. Those high leg kicks went on the entire evening. She did not have any underwear on, and her two assistants told her repeatedly to cover her vagina. So I know she's saying no vaginas were shown, and her assistants say that, but they themselves told her to cover herself at least a dozen times during the night. I felt uncomfortable, to be honest, and I just sort of was laughing it off because I really didn't know what else to do, you know?
Right. It's awkward.
It's awkward. And so at the end of it, you know, Brooks talking to me was, he was just trying to be protective of his sister who really did need my time and my attention and was, you know, this was the first time she had met Jen and it was a lot, you know. And so Brooks just wanted to make sure I knew that how important it was to Chloe to have that time with me with everything she had been going through with, you know, her health, with our separation. She needed her mother. And he was
right.
making it clear to me to protect her. So, I applaud him for that. Like, that's being a very good brother and a good son, in my view.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's, you know, in my view, I don't understand why Jen didn't just, when she saw this, say, you know what, I was drunk and my behavior was inappropriate and I'm sorry. And if she'd done that, we wouldn't have to have this conversation right now. I would have never talked about there being more to it, ever. I would have let it go and moved forward. But I'm backed in a corner now. I have no choice but to speak out because she did the exact opposite.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you sharing that. I mean, it definitely adds more context to the situation. You know, there's a time and a place for everything. And it just sounds like what happened that night, it just like wasn't the time and place for what your family was going through.
Exactly. And it wasn't the type of evening that it was supposed to be. I thought she was coming over on her own. And, you know, it just was to meet my children. That was the understanding I had. That was the understanding my children had, you know. And they were uncomfortable. They did leave. And, you know, had they thought it was an adult night, I mean, they're young adults, but they're not my age.
Right.
They thought it was an older adult night or whatever.
Yeah, that's a different vibe.
They would have said, hello, how are you? And left the room and gone their merry way. But Chloe was supposed to be meeting Jen. That was the purpose of it.
Yeah. Well, fun fact, Meredith, Crystal, Jen's second assistant, she and I lived together here in New York for like 3 years. We're good friends.
Oh, that's so funny.
Isn't that funny? I remember when she first started telling me like, yeah, I think, you know, my boss Jen, I think she's doing this show for Bravo or whatever. And I was like, I don't know, whatever. And then all of a sudden it just like came to be. And I was like, oh my God.
That is so funny. What a small world.
It's a small world. It is a small world. Well, let's talk about the fan reaction to the show because that has been gigantic. Have you seen like memes of yourself or anything about the show that has just like totally cracked you up?
Yeah, for sure. You know, there are a lot of like funny things that were said during the show that of course I didn't hear, you know, from the other women. But I don't know. There was just funny. There have been a lot of funny memes. You know, there have been a lot of really good memes, especially with Mary. I feel like because she's so expressive that, you know, sort of like her wide eyed look or whatever just gets thrown out there with anything that's like surprising, you know. But yeah, there's been a lot of fun stuff for sure.
I definitely saw some good ones of you in the, you know, look from the first episode from the party with the pink and the big, you know, feathery shoulders. There was definitely some stuff around that.
Oh yeah, there were a lot of some were really cute and fun, some were like funny, like some pink bird character. I don't even know who it was. Some cartoon character or whatever. But, you know, it's cute. It's fun. I think that stuff I think is funny as long as it's not vicious. You know, if it's about someone's dress, who cares? If it's about their character, I don't like
that. Right, that's another story. It's a fine line sometimes when it comes to housewives. Yeah. Have you connected with any other housewives or Bravo celebrities like in this whole experience?
Yeah, I have. I have talked with several other housewives since this whole thing started. And I've had some connections to some of them even before this started.
Yeah.
But I've talked extensively with Bronwyn, and Dolores was at my screening in New York that we did for the premiere. A little bit with Carrie from Dallas, Stephanie from Dallas, Jackie from New Jersey a bit.
No, I love Jackie.
Yeah, and everyone's been really very warm, very friendly. Oh, Emily too from OC. You know, just super friendly and nice. It feels like a nice sort of family, so to speak. Yeah.
Like a sorority, right? That's what I've heard so many women say. It's like this sorority. It's like this thing that you guys are all a part of and nobody else will really understand, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's really true, you know? Oh, and Jill Zarin, I've been talking to as well. She's been really nice and helpful too.
Yeah. She's like a classic. She's like a throwback.
Yeah, I'm actually going to meet her in a couple weeks in person. So I'm looking forward to that. She seems great.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we got to see those pictures on Instagram too. So make sure you get those posted.
We will do that.
Well, I wanted to play a little game with you before we wrap up, because I know that the joke has been that you and Lisa, you know, look so similar. So I wanted to play a game of superlatives so that we can actually get to know the differences between you guys.
Well, a secret though that will help everyone tell us apart now?
Yes.
I cut 5 inches off.
Oh, that is true. I have seen shorter hair in some of the interview looks. That's true. So that's a good...
Oh, no. That was in the interview look. That was actually a wig.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But no, post all of that, like just very like within the last couple of weeks.
Oh, okay. So. All right. So that's a good one. Okay. But let's find out more about, you know, personality wise, because I think we're going to have some differences there. Of you and Lisa, who is more athletic?
I think I'm more athletic. I don't think Lisa's really all that into sports.
Right.
I mean, I don't know that I would say I'm into sports, but I'm very much into individual sports and fitness. I don't do team sports either.
Right, right. So that'll go to you. We'll give you more athletic. Who is a better driver?
Oh, Lisa.
And why is that?
One experience where you will be very surprised. But I really don't like to drive, and she's not huge on driving, but she likes cars. Like, she gets into the whole thing much more than I do. I'm really not a very good driver. I took my side view mirror off on a mountain a few weeks ago, so I should probably have my license revoked. But.
Well, everyone, stay off the roads when Meredith is driving. Just, you heard it here first. Who would you say of you and Lisa is the bigger flirt?
I don't know. That one's a little tough. I'd say we're probably pretty equal because we're both like friendly and outgoing in our own ways. You know, we're different. I mean, Lisa's much more talkative than I am. Mm-hmm. We're sort of like, we both definitely like meeting new people, and I would say that's a tie.
Okay. I could see that. Who is the shadiest?
Well, I don't think I'm shady at all. And I would call Lisa shady, but of course I'm going to have to say her over me. Sorry.
Right. Sorry, Lisa. It's something about being named Lisa as a housewife. It's just like, it's in the contract. You got to be a little shady, right? Of the two of you, who has the bigger closet?
Well, I was in her closet. I probably do have more clothes than she has. I have a lot of clothes scattered all over the country. Probably me, but she has a great closet. I do love her closet.
Right. I could see, like, maybe you guys could maybe collaborate, share some items a little bit, you know, dig into each other's closet.
I would love it, but we have exact opposite body types, you know, like I'm bigger on top and smaller on bottom, and she's bigger on bottom, smaller on top. So I don't think I know her tops will not fit me that much. I can probably
maybe just jackets, maybe just coats then. I think I know the answer to the next one. Who eats more fast food?
Oh, well, that's a no-brainer. Lisa. Fast food. I'm not a fast food girl.
Right. Yeah, I know. I don't blame you, but I just loved in the first episode, I think that's when we saw Lisa just like go to the various fast food places that she wanted food from. Like, I was like, that's how you do it.
Hysterical. I was like, that is so funny. It's so good.
Okay, last one. Who has changed the most in season one?
I would say me. I mean, I would say that across the board, not just with me and Lisa. You know, this was definitely for me, I think it was intense for a lot of the women in different ways. For me, like Whitney with her dad is super intense, but that's more about her dealing with her dad, whereas the issues I was dealing with, I think, were so personal within myself.
Yeah.
That I'd have to say me, you know, there were definitely, I'm not belittling anyone else's issues, but I would say me.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, just from what I've seen so far, I would probably say the same thing. Cause even just in this conversation, you know, like what you've shared has definitely shown that you've grown a lot, and your family has grown a lot in the last year.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's incredible. Like I said, Housewives coupled with COVID saved my marriage, and it was a complete transformation for me, for Seth, and for, you know, my children too. You know, as much as they tried to say to us, oh, we just want you to be happy, do what you need to do, whatever. Believe me, they're very relieved.
Yeah.
You know, that it didn't end in divorce.
Of course. Yeah, no, I believe it. Well, Meredith, thank you so much for chatting with me today. I really appreciate it. And don't forget to send me that list of places to go in Toronto. Orange County.
This is maybe the first Real Housewives trip where I've thought, you couldn't pay me to go on this trip.
Yes. Okay. That's a great place to start, because I will agree with Kelly Dodd in that Lake Arrowhead is a little bit weird. So do you remember a couple years ago, I went out to California for my friend's wedding, and it's when they had done my makeup really crazy. Oh,
yeah. Resurface that photo.
Oh my God. No. Last time I brought it up on the show, so many people were messaging me. They found the picture on Instagram and like made me relive it or whatever. But yes, we went to Lake Arrowhead for that wedding, which it's very beautiful up there. And what's interesting about it is it's kind of like upstate or Western New York meets California. It has the weather of California, but sort of the vibe of like a little bit more quaint upstate. And my friend Kelly, who got married, she's from upstate New York. Her husband is from California. So it was sort of this perfect place for them to have their wedding. But it's a little strange. Like, I remember there were just a lot of like very religious undertones, and like her wedding planner thought it was weird that she had a gay man standing on her side, like that wasn't accepted. So it just, I remember being up there and feeling just a strange vibe. So I understand what Kelly was saying. So that alone is like setting the trip up strangely. And then you have just all the other circumstances at play. It's just like,
yeah, because it's like, first of all, Emily and Shannon aren't there because they both, well, Emily has tested positive for COVID. Shannon's has negative tests, but she's been exposed to people who have it.
Yeah.
So they're both staying home. So already the dynamic is a little bit off. Then you have, you know, Elizabeth and Gina and Kelly, but then you have Bronwyn, who's been digging up dirt on Elizabeth, mm-hmm. who is newly sober. And just the whole thing just felt so not right, you know?
Yeah.
Just something was very off about that group of women coming together.
Yeah, it just didn't seem like the right group to be together. If we had just like swapped one out for Shannon or Emily, it might have even worked better. But yeah, this was just a rough gathering.
It's also, I think it's just, it's hard for me as a viewer because it's hard for Bronwyn. Like She feels I shouldn't be here, and I feel that way too watching her. Just like, it's not right now. Like, you have so much stuff that you need to sort. You just seem uncomfortable, and just not even owning up to the Elizabeth stuff is not, like, I don't know. It just feels weird.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I wanted to actually bring up something in the conversation that Bronwyn and Gina are having about Bronwyn's marriage and the sobriety and how that's affected it. They bring up the fact, you know, that Sean is an enabler. And I think so far, there's been such a negative connotation around that word. But in cases of addiction, oftentimes enablers are manipulated to be in the position that they are in. Mm. And that is because someone who has an addiction is going to do whatever they can to feed that addiction. And it's going to bring the people closest to them into that in a very difficult and put them in a very difficult position. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think Sean isn't coming from a place of like, I'm enabling her because I want to keep controlling her or whatever it may be. And I don't want it to come across like Sean is the bad guy in this scenario. And I don't necessarily think that's what Bronwyn or Gina are really saying.
No, but it's true because Bronwyn is having such a rough road with him. It's, you know, seeping out of her, basically just her anger toward him, she's tired of him. And I agree, like the word enabler, it's a very complicated, complex thing that,
yeah.
So I totally hear what you're saying. And I thought it was good that Bronwyn said that he admitted, like, I didn't leave you because I didn't think you would live. Like,
right.
He is very much a victim also.
Yeah,
this.
Absolutely. And just the way that she spoke to him too when she made the phone call of like, I told you to have your phone with you.
Hey, are you with your father? Give your phone to daddy. Hey, honey, what was like the one thing I asked you to do? I asked you to have your phone on you. So if I call, like, I shouldn't have to track you down.
I am.
No, just, you're not. I had to track you down through Rowan.
You know, I'm just going to get sounded bad, right?
It's a big responsibility she's put on him.
Right. And on top of the responsibility of the 7 kids, actually, at this point, there's probably like 10 kids in the household because I know one of her daughters had their boyfriend living with them during quarantine. So maybe not at this point the boyfriend was there, but still, it just I just felt like that wasn't a kind way to approach someone who you are asking for support at this time.
Oh, the one thing that really struck me too about the episode was Bronwyn telling Kelly, like sort of reprimanding her, like you need to be staying home, doing nothing. But then there was a video of Bronwyn out with a bunch of people without wearing a mask.
So I guess Bronwyn was at the club that day. She told me not to go out.
Wait, show her the video.
So I get this video sent to me from one of my girlfriends. She goes, I thought you were supposed to be in quarantine because you're going on this trip. I said, yeah. Oh, well, no, we're all being good. She goes, no, you're not. Bronwyn.
All right, let me.
There she is, no mask, okay? There she did her elbow. There's Sean right there.
She just told me not to go out or do anything.
What a hypocrite. Pot kettle, kettle black.
I'm just all too familiar right now with the COVID hypocrisy.
Wait, how so?
I just feel like people, it's very much like, I have often thought I should just get off Instagram. Like, the pandemic has not been good for social media.
Yeah.
And I think that there are people who just feel the need to spout all of this like condemning stories and posts. And it's like everyone else is living their life wrong. But like, then you kind of see them doing things and you're like,
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you've experienced this, but I'm just, people are really annoying.
Well, I absolutely have experienced it. And I was off Instagram again for a couple of weeks and just recently went back on over the week. I think it's healthy. I think it's a great way to just check in with yourself and not have that outside influence, because you're right. People do not practice what they preach. Some people do. A lot of people don't. And I think we've seen more of that on social media. There is such a microscope on it at the moment with everything that's happened in the last year. And I think even Kelly has brought it up outside of the show and more recently when it comes to Bronwyn, because Bronwyn was doing a lot of traveling in the last couple of months. And, you know, I think it was leading up into the premiere of this season and whatnot. And she had her reasons, whatever. But yeah, there is a lot of hypocrisy at many levels, and social media brings that to light when before you may never know what somebody was up to. I also just, this whole experience that Emily is having with Shane is heartbreaking to me.
Yes.
It is absolutely, like, I almost started crying watching her just do her like self-tape video and then waiting outside of the hospital. That feeling of helplessness when someone you love is sick and there's nothing you can do to help them. And then this added layer, which I think Shannon is the one who says it in the episode, of none of it makes sense, which is what makes it so frightening. Like,
right.
This, it's so new, and it's every week throughout this whole pandemic experience, there's been some new information, it feels like, that changes the course of like how the pandemic needs to, or how we need to react to the pandemic. And it's just, it's so heartbreaking, and it's so sad to see people go through what they're going through, and especially Emily and Shane, like, poor Shane.
Yeah. And poor Emily. Yeah. It's just both of them. It's just so sad.
Well, we also get a bit of the whole Black Lives Matter conversation comes up. So with someone like Gina, for example, we have seen her have a conversation with Giselle over FaceTime. I think it was in the last episode, talking to her about the Black Lives Matter movement and the work that needs to be done. And Gina kind of being like, okay, I'm ready to saddle up and help. We know Bronwyn has been very outspoken. We saw her social media throughout the whole thing. And the way she's navigating this conversation with Kelly shows that she has really become an ally to the whole movement. And even Elizabeth is clearly taking steps to better understand white privilege and what the movement is all about, and the fact that, you know, racism is still so prevalent today. And Kelly is sort of taking that other side of the argument, which we knew was coming, but it just, I feel like this conversation that's happening, so many of us have had over the last 8 months or however long it's been. Mm-hmm. And just, it's the same things like that people have been saying. So it's just, I don't know. It's just the things that Kelly was saying in particular, I'm sort of like, oh my God, these are the arguments that I feel like we've been combating for such a long time now.
I'm a minority, I'm a Mexican.
But when you go to the grocery store in a hoodie, you're not worried about being shot. None of us here are. Black people are being killed disproportionately by cops.
There's bad cops. I mean,
and
I know.
That's what we're trying to fix right now.
But you're not going to do that by destroying things.
Well, we are doing it. It's happening right now.
Right. It's uncomfortable because on one hand, people will say, well, look, we should be able to disagree.
Right.
But then on the other hand, you're like, but there's some things that just you can't, they just can't disagree about, you know, like if you want to continue a relationship, like fundamentally, we have to be on the same page. So it's just... And, you know, hearing Gina talk about her experience getting arrested, why she understands her privilege because of that experience. And also, and, you know, it's happening right now here with you and me too, but the fact that they could have this heated discussion and then go eat salmon.
Yeah.
Like, it's not part of their everyday life experience. It's this thing that they are able to look at from an outsider point of view and talk about.
Yes. Absolutely. And that's even something that I think Elizabeth says in her interview, where she's obviously taken many steps to understand what's going on, but she refers to it as like their cause or their movement. And it's like, no, this has to be everybody. This isn't just about Black people. This is about everyone understanding what's going on and working to become anti-racist. And that's sort of the point of the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, should we do Real Housewives of Salt Lake City?
Yes.
All right. My first question for you is, do you think Jen is holding on to this grudge with Mary because she's kind of the easiest target of all the wives on the show?
Because, I mean, why do you say that? Why do you say easiest?
Well, I only say that because, like, lowest hanging fruit, what can you go after? Like, the jugular, easiest on Mary. It's the grandfather thing, right? Step-grandfather, let me clarify. So, like, maybe, I don't know. A lot of people have said online that they think that Jen almost is, like, running from a housewife's handbook of like, all the things that you do to be, like, a bold housewife. So, like, did she just kind of pick Mary because it was easy, or do you think she really has these feelings towards her?
It's interesting because I was just doing an interview for Life After Bravo with someone, I can't say who yet, but you know Eric. And
I do.
And she was saying, you know, some people come onto the show and it's really clear that they've read the handbook Bible. They've watched the shows, they've done their research. And whether they then mean for it to influence them or not, it sort of does. So, like, you know, yeah, is Jen operating from this place of, oh, like, I also, maybe she's just someone who always needs a little drama in her life, you know?
That's a good point. I think it might be more so that.
Right.
And actually, you're saying that and knowing which person you interviewed is very interesting. So we'll circle back. We'll put a pin on that, circle back later on in a later episode about that.
Okay.
Well, another thing that happens with Jen in this episode that I think is funny and reminded me of Teddy Mellencamp's first season of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills is this pretend amnesia that Jen is having when she's finally confronted at this woman Catherine's party by Mary, who's like, listen, you said these things about me at the 20s party and it just, like, wasn't really nice. And Jen's like, what? And, you know, like Erica said to Teddy Mellencamp, like,
excuse me, don't you ever say that to me.
Right. Like Teddy said to Erica, I should say, like, oh, I don't know why you're having pretend amnesia over this. It seems like Jen is not very willing to admit to what she had said.
I never said anything. What are you?
You were screaming things at me.
No, I wasn't.
She's straight up lying. Okay. Do you have a twin? Or are you just not in reality?
Okay, well, we also have Brooks, Meredith's son, getting ready for his fashion show. And we see him pretty upset over the fact that Seth isn't there. I have two thoughts on that, and I'm curious to know what you think. Number one, Meredith was kind of the one who pushed Seth away and asked for space. So should Meredith be like, look, Brooks, I know that you're sad about this, but it's actually, I have some responsibility over the fact that your father's not there. Number two, what does it matter if your dad's not there, Brooks? Because this is being filmed for a reality show and that's way cooler.
Because at the end of the day, you always need your father's approval. You wouldn't understand because it was just handed to you on a silver platter from the day you were born. But most people really need that validation.
Yeah, no, I mean, I understand. And I do feel for Brooks, but I do believe that Meredith, in an effort to just be transparent with Brooks and not allow him to be upset with his father, to just kind of be like, look, we're going through this right now. As you know, I had sort of asked for some space and I'm sorry that your dad can't be here, but I'm here to support you. You know, he supports you from afar and just kind of go from there. It feels like it's a little bit her responsibility to.
Yeah. But at the same time, I just think Seth could have gotten a hotel room and, like, you don't miss these big moments in your kid's life.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
He should have been there. He should have found a way or just been like, no, like, I get you need your space, but you're going to have to wait a minute.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of this traveling that he does for work is one of the fundamental issues that maybe Meredith is having in their relationship because they've moved a lot.
Absolutely.
And she doesn't want to move anymore. She's like, hell no, am I going to Ohio? So maybe she doesn't feel necessarily the need to defend Seth because she also feels a type of way about the fact that he's always gone.
Yeah, I mean, he misses a lot of big moments. He missed her birthday. So, I mean, yeah.
Right.
I agree.
Which Meredith just had another birthday. Can you believe it's been like a full year from when they filmed that?
It's crazy.
Happy birthday, Meredith. Happy and birthday. Lisa, because I think Lisa's is right around the same time. Okay, so I, as a single gay man, or as just a single person for most of my 20s, you know, did a lot of online dating. And you got to kiss a lot of frogs to find your prince, right? We have Heather over here who's like, I've been on Bumble for 2 weeks and I've been on 4 dates and like, it's just not working out. Girl, that is scratching the surface of what dating is like in 2020, like no matter how old you are.
Yeah. I mean, look, take Ramona as an example, right?
Ooh.
She's dating. she's double booking, right? Like she realized it's a numbers game. You got to get through a lot of them to find a good one.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe Heather should give Ramona a call and get some tips on how to do it.
Yes.
I mean, yes. Ramona is doing the most when it comes to her social life, but she's never spending a night alone. So that's something. Well, I mean, you know, actually, now that I think about it, I don't know if Heather does need any tips from Ramona, because we see her take home this guy from the party with like zero to no effort. And she's got game.
I can do this completely sober if you want. Not a problem. I'm not worried about any like sort of beer goggles or nothing. I just take you stone cold, baby.
Yes. I mean, God bless.
I mean, she was just like straight up like, hey, what's going on? You having a good time? Cool. Like, you want to get out of here? I don't know. This is fun. But like, hey, yeah, let's go. And I was like, okay, Heather, I see you. She should have no problem getting dates.
Right. Probably a difference between getting a date, getting a good one, you know?
Yeah, that's fair. We get an appearance in this episode from two familiar faces, Lala Kent and Katie Maloney Schwartz. Were you surprised to see them pop up?
It's like, on one hand, happy to see them because it's, you know, friends I haven't seen in forever. Yeah. On the other hand, it's a little bit like, it's a strange time because it's like, well, what's happening with Vanderpump Rules?
Yeah.
So seeing them is also a reminder of that and like that I missed the show and I'm just sort of curious what's happening there.
Right. Well, and also I guess it wouldn't be a total surprise to have them pop up because they are both from that area and it would make sense that they are there for Sundance and bouncing around to various parties. There's actually an article on BravoTV.com now, which is part of our Bravo Insider program. And Lala and Katie talk about how many other people other than like Whitney and some of the housewives that they knew at the party. Lala was like, oh yeah, this guy that I dated like in high school, his cousin was there. I recognized a whole bunch of people. So it was almost like a homecoming for both of them, which I thought was kind of interesting. And I wish maybe we saw a little bit more of their personal interactions, but again, not their show. I get it.
Right.
Okay, another one of my new favorite Bravo sayings, in addition to eat my cooter, even though you don't like that word, from Chef Rachel on Below Deck is is Look. Whitney telling Heather to return with honor.
Remember who you are. Return with honor.
Which is just so hilarious because they're cousins. They both grew up Mormon. They're used to the way of life that comes with being Mormon. And I think they're good at joking about it and walking that line of like, we're making our own path in this religion. But it just cracked me up to just be like, if you're going off with this guy, return with honor. Like, I can see parents saying that to their kids as they go out on their first date.
I can see me saying it to
right.
you.
I mean, it's just so good. Return with, I'm just going to say that when like Danny goes to the grocery store, I'm just going to return with honor. It reminds me of like Mulan for some, I feel like that's close to a line in Mulan. Yeah. Okay. Rose and Thorn.
Yes.
Okay. Let's do Rose and Thorn.
All right. So I have the same Rose and Thorn for this week. So I'm going to let you give both of yours and then I'll give mine.
Oh, okay. So my Rose is from Real Housewives of Atlanta. It is just the fact that Marlo and Kenya's disdain for each other, it just amuses me to no end. And Marlo saying to LaToya, you know, Kenya can't keep a man if Jesus paid her to. It's just so funny to me. She's just so funny. I love Marlo.
You can take his advice as in like how to pronounce certain words, but she can't keep a man if Jesus paid her to.
Well, I loved Marlo's line right before that too. That was like, you can go to Kenya for advice like on how to pronounce a word. It was so shady.
My thorn is Rachel from Below Deck for a few reasons. One, you know, I really, I really liked that she was this female chef and she was very strong and had opinions. And yeah, she was zany. But then it was like this episode, I just felt like she was sort of a sad sack in terms of like whimpering over missing her boyfriend. Like it just read as very sad. Like, I don't know. Like, yes, it can be, it's fine to be, to miss your boyfriend, but to ultimately go home because of that, because I don't think it had anything to do with the over-the-top preference sheet. I think she just missed her boyfriend, and it was just a little bit, ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh. And then also her use of the word cooter, which I find to be the most horrendous word in all of the English language.
Eat my cooter.
Do you really?
I hate that word so much.
Oh my God.
Don't ever say it to me.
I'm going to like get you a custom Christmas card.
Don't you dare.
Or birthday, because your birthday is coming up.
It's true. Okay, so what's your rose and thorn?
Okay, so my rose and thorn is Real Housewives of Potomac reunion Monique's binder. Because it's rose due to the fact that she came prepared with receipts and was ready to go. Thorn, because for me personally, the delivery, the situation with Giselle was so hard to watch. And I think the binder and what's happening in this part of the reunion is taking the show to such a dark place that like I miss the fun and exciting and like crazy Potomac. And that's what happens with Housewives, right? There's something that takes the show a little bit darker than it was before. And I felt that was what was happening at the end of this reunion. So I get it. You know, it's my rose because it's organized, it's color coded. Like that's what you got to do in these scenarios, especially someone like Monique who needs to come prepared to something like this, but thorn because like, damn, that was tough.
Right. Agreed. And next week we'll be back with an all new episode with our special guest co-host Ashley Darby. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 9. And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long. You can find us on Instagram at Bravo Daily Dish.
And on Twitter at Bravo TV. Just don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm everywhere at Eric J. Mack. That's E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out.
You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy, miss me.